Rights Here, Right Now is the theme of the 17th International AIDS Conference, which opens in Vienna this weekend. The six-day meeting brings together scientists, government and community leaders, donors and UN agencies, all working in the fields of HIV/AIDS care and prevention. Held every 2 years, the conference offers a chance to assess new scientific knowledge, discuss vital funding and learn from best practice being developed among communities most affected by the pandemic. Ahead of the main conference on Friday and Saturday, churches and faith-based groups will be meeting for their own discussions on the specific mission and ministry offered by their organisations. Among those taking part is Monsignor Bob Vitillo, Special Advisor on HIV/AIDS to the Global Catholic Confederation of Aid and Development Agencies, Caritas Internationalis.
Well, the focus, as the title indicates, is on human rights. And there are a number of different facets of human rights that I believe will be emphasized during this conference. Perhaps the most important is the right to health and the right to access to treatment. This is a big issue now because of the global economic crisis and the fact that a number of governments that had promised to give substantial funding for antiretroviral medications seem to be rethinking that, either based on their own economic difficulties or on the belief, and I would question this belief, but on the belief that this is going to be a kind of permanent drain on the economies of some of the more wealthy countries to fund this kind of treatment in the resource-poor countries.
So what kind of action can you take here, as you say, in the midst of this economic crisis? What kind of approach will the conference be taking to try and keep this at the top of the agenda?
Well, certainly this is a conference that will be attended by probably about 25,000 people, scientists, clinicians, activists, government leaders, and those from non-governmental organizations, including many faith-based organizations, that are actually delivering the services, especially in the developing countries. So one thing that will happen is that there will be reports on the success of these treatment programs, the fact that with these antiretroviral treatments, people are living longer and they're beginning now to be able to be reintegrated into society to work once again to care for their families. And I think this will have to be an important emphasis coming out of the conference to show that, yes, it's costly to maintain these treatment programs, but it's an investment in the future development of these countries. Whereas previously, when people did not have any treatment, then many of them were sick for a long period of time, drained the medical structures in the countries, and then also because of the premature deaths of people in their middle years, then left many, many more orphans and dependent people who still were draining the society. So I think we have to see these treatment programs as a real investment in development.
Now, a lot of this work is going on in the developing world, and previous conferences have been held in places like Mexico City or Bangkok. Why do you think Vienna has been chosen for this one?
I think Vienna has been chosen for this one because of a real need to focus on the situation in Eastern Europe and in Central Asia. The epidemics have arrived there later, probably because under the old Marxist governments, these countries were quite isolated and didn't have as much travel in and out of the country, and so there was less spread of HIV as a result of that. Now, since these countries have opened up to the rest of the world, we see that there's been a spread of the virus, both by sexual means, but also by injecting drug use. And there's still a great deal of stigma and discrimination toward people living with HIV and AIDS all over the world, but especially in this part of the world, in Eastern Europe and in Central Asia. So I think that the planners of the International AIDS Conference saw it as time to choose a place that was close to this region of the world and to try to involve more of the government officials and the scientists and the clinicians from that part of the world.
Now, the Catholic Church will be holding its own pre-conference meetings, won't it, there in Vienna, and you're addressing some of these sessions as well as an interfaith session. Can you tell us a bit more about this specific focus from faith-based groups?
Yes. While the faith-based groups certainly are involved in the larger conference, it's also been felt by a number of faith-based groups, including Catholic ones, that it's necessary to bring the people involved in faith-based activities together to help them share their own experiences and also to help them be inspired and enriched by their own unique missions, faith-based missions, when they come together during these conferences. First of all, during the main conference, there often is a lot of criticism. I think it's unwarranted and unmerited criticism against faith-based groups. And so a lot of times people working in faith-based activities feel discriminated against themselves. And also, it's very, very important for faith-based organizations to understand what a great burden of care and of education they take with regard to HIV and AIDS and to learn from each other as they share their experiences. So the Catholic networking sessions will be held on Friday afternoon and Sunday morning. And we have more than 100 people coming from Catholic agencies and religious orders from all over the world to share with each other during that time. We'll also spend some time for them to have some workshops so that they could learn from the experiences of others. And some of the workshop topics involve how to help people learn to do positive living with HIV and AIDS. We're in a transition era where previously a lot of the AIDS programs were developed to help people die with dignity as a result of AIDS. Now we want to help them live since they have access, more and more have access to these life-saving medications. We'll also have workshops on ethical issues related to HIV and AIDS, on how to care for children. In Eastern Europe, we still have many HIV-positive children being abandoned in the maternity hospitals with no place to go. And so many of the Catholic organizations are starting programs that they'd like to share their experiences for.
You're talking about helping people live longer with these antiretroviral drugs. And in fact, you'll be talking about this question of universal access. How far have we got on that? How much further is there still to go before this becomes a reality?
Well, we have about 5 million people now out of the 10 million HIV-infected people who need access to these medications, whose disease is so far advanced that they need to have these medications in order to live longer. So about half of them have access to the medications. That's a long way compared to just a few years ago when very, very few in developing countries had access to the medications. However, it's still 50% lower than we need to have it. And the bigger fear now is that many of the big government funders, like the Global Fund and like the United States PEPFAR program, are telling their partners in the developing countries not to enroll new patients in these programs because of the limitations in funding that will be available. Also, most of these programs are giving out first-line antiretroviral medications, which were effective for many people, but after a while, sometimes these first-line medications no longer work. And the second and the third-line medications are still very, very expensive, so out of the reach of governments from the developing countries. So there's still many big challenges for us to face in order to attain universal access for all who need it.
You'll be addressing a session on migration, won't you, related to HIV and AIDS, talking about what's described as spaces of vulnerability. Can you tell us more about what this means and the work that's going on with regard to migrant populations?
The specific issue that I will address in that program is how faith-based organizations work with migrant populations. And there are a number of major ways that I will highlight. One is that many faith-based organizations get involved in prevention education with people before they migrate from their countries to help them understand the dangers of HIV and of other sexually transmitted illnesses, and to help them understand why the Catholic Church counsels abstinence outside of marriage and fidelity within marriage. The second thing is that the Catholic Church gets involved in treating migrant people who are living with HIV, and that's especially important in many countries where migrants do not have the right to access the health services and the HIV services in countries that disqualify migrants from such access. And so I'll give you an example. In Botswana, many of the refugees coming from Zimbabwe cannot get any government aid if they're HIV infected, but the Catholic Church has a special program through funding with PEPFAR, the United States government agency, to be able to give those medications to people living with HIV. And that's true in a number of Middle Eastern countries and in other countries throughout the world.
In 2009, Caritas launched its own very specific mother-to-child prevention campaign, didn't it? HEART, the highly active antiretroviral therapy. How successful has this specifically been in trying to help children avoid getting the disease?
That campaign has two parts. One is to promote greater access for pregnant women who are HIV infected to get access to these very simple medications that could prevent the transmission from mother to child. We have these medications. They don't cost a lot, and yet many, many pregnant women don't get access to them. So we want to scale up that program. That has made some progress, but not enough. And then the other part of the campaign is to advocate with pharmaceutical companies and with governments and research institutes to develop child-friendly dosages and formulations of the medications so that more children infected with HIV could live longer. And on that, we've made some progress. We now have about 5 or 6 child-friendly medications that are available in 6 dosages so that the child only has to take 1 dose of the medication per day that are available to these children, and we're using them in many parts of the world. But still, we need additional formulations, and we also have practically no second or third line medications available. So if the first line medications fail with the child, then the child will get sick and will die very, very quickly. So the campaign has made some success. We certainly have had a number of very effective discussions with pharmaceutical companies. We also have been able to collect about 600 letters from children all over the world to government officials and to pharmaceutical companies begging that these medications be made available to their peers who are dying because of AIDS. And also Caritas Austria, and especially the Diocese of Caritas Feldkirch in Austria, has collected about 20,000 signatures on a petition to promote this campaign, and they'll hand these signatures over to the Austrian government Foreign Development Office during the AIDS conference.
You're talking about some very specific initiatives to support the work of Caritas on HIV and AIDS. What is your message to people listening to this program? What else would you like people to do to support this work?
Well, first of all, I want them to know that AIDS is not over. We still have a major problem. It's still responsible for the deaths of many, many people, especially between 15 and 49 years of age. And when they die, their children become orphans. So although our media, especially in the Western world, does not speak so much about AIDS, it still is a major health crisis in the world. Secondly, I want them to be sensitive to the fact that even if they live in a country where AIDS is not a major problem any longer because of the access to the antiretroviral medications, still more than half of the people who need those medications in the developing world do not have such access. And so we need to encourage our government officials to continue their foreign aid and development monies so that we can help poor countries get access to those medications for their citizens. And finally, I want them to be especially sensitive to the issue of children with AIDS. If they don't have access to these life-saving medications, more than half of them die before their second birthday. That's a situation that's entirely preventable with the medications, and we should be outraged to think that so many infants and children are dying of AIDS in this world when we have medications that are available, but we simply are not spending enough money to make them available to poor children.
My thanks there to Monsignor Bob Vitillo, Special Advisor on HIV/AIDS to Caritas Internationalis, the Global Confederation of Catholic Aid and Development Agencies.